Welcome to Medicus, a student-run podcast about any and all things in the world of medicine. Follow along as we interview outstanding individuals about important topics in healthcare.
Hi, everyone. It's Isabel Tan here. I'm here with Dr. Katie Lichter for this episode of Medicus. Dr. Katie Lichter graduated with her medical degree from Loyola University Chicago Stritch School of Medicine after earning a Bachelor of Science in Business Analytics and Economics and a Master's in Public Health from Johns Hopkins University. She is currently a radiation oncology resident at the University of California, San Francisco. She is a climate energy health fellow with the UC Carbon Neutrality Initiative, as well as a Harvard and Cambridge Health Alliance Climate Health Organizing Fellow and editorial fellow with the New England Journal of Medicine. She is the founder of Aero Climate Health Equity and Sustainability Task Force, as well as the principal investigator of Green Health Lab. The Green Health Lab at UCSF studies the interplay between healthcare delivery and climate change, exploring the impact of the healthcare system and health institutions on the environment and the impact of climate change on clinical and patient care. Welcome, Dr. Lichter, to Medicus. So excited to talk to you today, Dr. Lichter. Can you tell me a little bit about what led you to specialize in radiation oncology?
Sure, absolutely. So like many medical students, and probably a lot like a lot of Loyola students, my path was rather circuitous. Came in interested in emergency medicine. I was very interested in public health and really being on the front lines of medicine. And that's where I thought I'd want to be, right in the action. And kept my mind open, like a lot of people, am I surgery, am I not surgery? And so it was actually through my best friend in medical school at Loyola, Christina Small. Her father is actually the chair of radiation oncology at Loyola. And so it's sort of a hidden specialty, but it is, as a lot of people say, a secret, in medicine, but a really great spot to land. I went through and I actually started my first rotation in hemonc through internal medicine, and I absolutely fell in love with the idea of taking care of cancer patients, something that really hit close to home. And I really was driven by the continuity of care. You know, you keep going through rotations, and then I wasn't ready to cut out surgery. I spent some time on the gynonc block and really fell in love with gynonc and being in the OR. And the other thing, besides emergency medicine was really taking care of women. So I was looking for a specialty where I could have continuity of care. I could do some procedures, but a big part of my background and a big part of my personality, what drives me to medicine is public health and global health. And so I had been doing some work and spent some time at Hopkins focused on global health and was really driven by the idea of taking care of women with cervical cancer and the impact that you could have in a community or, a woman's life in terms of giving definitive care and really how that impacts a family. And I found a lot of radiation oncologists were very engaged in this. And not only were they doing procedures to treat cervical cancer, but they were following their patients long term. And so it had this acuity, this continuity of care, but also the global health aspect of things, and then technology. At this point, I wasn't doing anything in climate health. That sort of comes into picture later. But yeah, I found really great mentors at Loyola, Dr. Winder in OBGYN, gynonc, and Dr. Small in radiation oncology. And through them and my best friend in medical school, just found a natural spot in radiation oncology. So now actually, both her and I talked one another into RADONC. So she is also a resident at MCW, just in Wisconsin, Milwaukee, and I'm in California. So we stay in close touch. So it's very fun.
Oh, I love that. I love the idea that you both found what you love to pursue and were able to keep that connection strong. Mm-hmm. And so for you, was medicine always on the table as the goal career? Was that something that you found along the way as you went deeper into your interest in global health?
Yeah, actually, I did my MPH in between third and fourth year of medical school. So I was doing, medical school in Chicago at Loyola, and I was very engaged in global health and, the department there or the center is fantastic. And I really wanted some time to build out the skills within global health. So, how to actually run community trials or how to run a clinical trial, how to investigate a lot of the things that I was interested in looking at. At the time, a lot of it had to do with technology and delivery of pharmaceuticals and preventing, stockouts or running out of medications. And so, I wanted the biostatistical skills and the epidemiology skills. And so, I had the opportunity to step out in between third and fourth year and pursue my master's of public health at that point.
Oh, that's so interesting. And then what led you to go kind of from that focus close over towards climate impact?
Yeah, so that's another interesting journey. So when I was matching, I had a partner that I was trying to align life goals and life steps with. And he was in the middle of a transition, just similar as I was going from medical school to residency. And at the time, we were talking about how we really want to incorporate our passions into our careers. And at the time, he was working in finance and was transitioning over to work in the climate space, in climate investing. And him and I were both very interested in climate, environmental health, and that's, sustainability was always a part of our everyday life, doing the small things, bringing our reusable bags to the grocery store and learning about how to protect the environment. We both are from Minnesota, and I think, having nature as a sacred place and an escape and really a way to preserve wellness and health and, what it means to not only individuals, but to communities, we really understood, how important that was. And so we ultimately landed in San Francisco because it was a really great spot for him for climate. And when I started my intern year, so before you go into radiation oncology, you do 1 year of internal medicine. And so when I started, it was fairly early on in the pandemic. It was June 2020. And in San Francisco, we were hit by two things. Not only did we have the pandemic and, patients were coming in and we were working long days in the ICU. And I started to see all the waste that was going on. And so I realized, not only were we dealing with this pandemic and the hardships of that, but working in the ICU, you started to see how much PPE we were going through. And all these sustainability efforts that I was doing at home, I started questioning, is there something more that we can do in the hospital? And the other thing that we were hit with at the same time was the wildfires in San Francisco. And so my patients were actually wearing their N95s, not only inside, but they were also wearing them outside because of the smoke. And working on the wards, you saw all the exacerbations, COPD, the respiratory exacerbations, the worsening of disease. And then I also saw that it was impacting cancer patients. So I took care of a patient on, we call it the day that the sun never rose in California. It was when all the sky was orange and you essentially couldn't be inside and you couldn't be outside. And that's when I had a patient come and they had missed many days of chemotherapy and radiation. They were coming from Northern California and unfortunately it just wasn't safe and their clinic had shut down. And so I started questioning, what about climate change? Is this going to impact my patients? And are we talking about that? Do we have a good understanding of how climate change is impacting patients? But then on the flip side, how is the healthcare sector contributing to climate change? I felt like nobody was talking about sustainability. So I started Googling it and I found out there are people who are talking about it. It's a very small group, but a very loud group. It's where I found Healthcare Without Harm and Practice Green Health. And I quickly learned a statistic that stuck with me, and it was that the US healthcare sector accounts for approximately 10% of all US greenhouse gas emissions. And so that was the answer to my question. Yes, so we absolutely impact it. And so I started thinking, can we build out models where we can build resiliency in communities and make them more resilient, the most vulnerable patients? And can we make them more resilient to climate change? But then also, can we start being more sustainable ourselves? Thinking about quality of care, realizing that there was a lot of opportunity here to actually improve, not only the quality of care we were giving, but patient outcomes.
I remember I was in San Francisco on that day where, everything was orange and it was just such a bizarre moment. And so it's wonderful to hear that that was kind of like a nexus point for you and it inspired, the beginning of that journey. That transitions well into my next question for you, which is to tell me about what you're up to now with your calculator and with your lab.
Yeah, absolutely. So just after that, I started thinking about what can I do as a trainee and how can I have impact? Knowing a lot of times I think along the process of medical training, there's the idea of getting to the top of the mountain. When I get to X point, I will do X. Somebody before I went to medical school said, you're going to be climbing a mountain, but make sure you always turn around at each step and take a look at the view. And so not only enjoy the process, but participate and take each step, be mindful about each step. So with that in mind, I try to think about ways that I can be involved now as a trainee. And so that's when I started working on projects with various medical students, several Loyola medical students who really have been the drivers of this, and then students at UCSF and across the nation. And we started working on projects really focusing on two sides of the coin. So one is, how does climate change impact patients and their health? And then how do we as a healthcare sector impact climate change? So we have a variety of projects that focus on both of those. We look at how do wildfires impact cancer care and cancer outcomes and other climate-fueled disasters such as hurricanes in Puerto Rico and storms in Florida and Texas. But then the other side too is looking at our processes and so doing waste audits, looking at our procedures and saying, do we have excess waste here? Are we opening up items that we're ultimately not using? And are we disposing of the waste in the correct way? We know that red bag waste or biohazardous waste has sometimes 11 times the carbon footprint of regular trash. And so making sure that we appropriately put things in place. But then also thinking about other things along with that. So one is travel. So a big portion of actually a scientist or a healthcare provider's footprint in terms of their environmental impact comes from conference travel. So something that we weren't thinking about too much before, but when everything went virtual, myself and several Loyola students thought, huh, this is a great time to look at the change. So we started looking at the change in carbon emissions associated with conferences from when everybody used to travel in person, 100% of the attendees, to then in 2020 when it stopped and everybody attended virtually. And then we continued and looked at what's been happening now that there's these hybrid conferences. And what does that look like? In doing so, we have looked at some of the largest conferences. So for example, ASCO, it's a oncology conference that happens in Chicago every year. And so we analyzed that conference and they have over 40,000 attendees, both US attendees and international attendees. So it gave us a really good sample size of conference attendees. And we thought, is there a way that with all this data, we can actually create a calculator online so individuals, whether you're a medical student or you're an attending and you're thinking about attending a conference, can you calculate your carbon emissions that would be associated with it? And then if you are going to attend in person, can you think about ways to offset that? So not only sometimes people think about purchasing carbon offsets, but what about lifestyle changes? Could I live car-free for X amount of days? Or could I eat a plant-based diet for a certain amount of days? And so our calculator does exactly that. Somebody can log in, say, I'm going to be flying from San Francisco to Chicago. I'm going to be staying for 3 days for the conference. And you can see exactly what those emissions will be. The nice thing is, too, is you can do it not only as an individual, but you can also calculate for a whole entire group. So a department chair who normally sends 50 of their faculty to a conference, they could look at that. And then you could even think about saying, hey, what if people want to stay behind? We know it's also a point of equity and inclusivity and accessibility. So for example, a lot of people, young junior faculty, especially women, have a lot of other responsibilities, home responsibilities. So could you incentivize or could you allow for people to stay behind and attend virtually? So that's been really great with the calculator. And then the last component of it too is conference organizers can also go on and say, what if we have a hybrid conference? And so if 25%, 50%, or even 75% attend virtually instead of in person, what is the change in admissions? Because we know that a lot of conferences, they do get money from this. And that was, you know, this money that conferences bring in is significant, not only to the sustainability of the professional societies themselves, but it's also, you know, certainly a networking thing too. So we just want the ability for organizers to log in and see what that impact might be. So when they're thinking about keeping hybrid options, hopefully this is one more data piece that will incentivize them to keep these virtual options. And again, you know, we really emphasize that this is a point of equity and inclusivity, that there's a lot of benefits from this beyond the environmental impact.
That's fascinating. This is the perfect time for something like that with so many changes that have happened because of the pandemic and moving to virtual. It's really, I think, a lot of institutions for conferences, but also for medical school admissions and residency interviews, having stuff move virtual as opposed to in person. Like, this is a real transition time. And so I feel like something like the calculator will be a wonderful tool to really bake in an awareness of the environmental impact into the decisions that are being made, which is amazing. So tell me more about the process of developing this calculator. And you mentioned that the beta version might be coming out soon. Where are you at in terms of completing it?
Yeah, absolutely. So you bring up a good point. So this is actually a continuation of another project that was made by a UCSF student, and it's called Interview Without Harm. And so our calculator is building off of that, and it's going to be called Network Without Harm. And their calculator was focused on residency and fellowship interviews. And so as exactly as you mentioned, there's been a big discussion. Should interviews stay in person or should they go virtual? And the data behind that was missing. And so they actually created a calculator to where interviewees, you know, for example, a medical student could punch in all of the different interviews that they were going to go on. So maybe they're going on 11 different interviews. They were able to calculate what their carbon emissions would be associated with going to all those in person. And then that data was actually very useful for those discussions. So we built off of their model, and we are now going to be launching in the coming months our calculator. So again, using the ASCO data, just used what we call life cycle assessment. So it's a accounting method for carbon emissions to allow us to be able to not only calculate the travel associated with it. So people can look at, you know, if they're traveling by car, if they're traveling by train, or if they're flying. But then it also looks at other components of conferencing. So it calculates the energy usage for the conference buildings and where they're going to be hosted. But and then it also accounts for the accommodations. On the flip side, it's important to calculate the things when somebody stays at home and when they're virtual. So it does look at the energy as well, or using your computer for 8 hours a day if you're going to be conferencing and things like that. So it takes all those things into play and calculates those, and then it gives you your ultimate emissions.
That's incredibly exciting. I feel like attending conferences just feels like something that is so baked in into being part of the medical community that you almost don't question it. Similar to, you know, in the OR, seeing the general like single-use waste and stuff like that. And so it's just invigorating to hear that there are strong efforts being made to change that. And I feel like this tool will be such a great resource.
Yeah, we hope that it will be a resource just to provide more information to people making those decisions. Just like when you go to purchase a flight, now you can see, what are your different options in terms of travel and what does that look like for emissions. And going to conferences, we don't want to underscore or frame that they're in any way bad. We know that the networking there is incredible. And the connections that you make are very important, not only on a personal level or career level, but these conferences do talk about, things that are up and coming in research, and they really do drive change and innovation. And so by no means are we saying that conferences are bad, but just having more options for people to attend and thinking about how we can do this sustainably. That's really what we're trying to add to the idea of conferences.
Absolutely. And as you mentioned, it ties into inclusivity as well. Like having more options and more flexibility for people will ultimately, hopefully, allow more people to attend these conferences and be part of it.
We hope so. Everybody has a different story, and just I think those hybrid models are fantastic. And, even thinking about our international colleagues, it's so important to be able to engage and include them. And there are a lot of financial barriers and logistical barriers that are associated with traveling that far. And so the opportunity to engage them is going to be key in our globalized world.
And so the calculator is coming out soon, hopefully. Are there other projects that you're currently working on with Green Health Lab?
I can talk about three different projects. So, when we're thinking about the impact that healthcare has on climate change, my first question was, how do we do this? How do we get these numbers? 8.5%, that's a lot. What does this mean for my specialty? And this is where I think it's really key for residents and trainees, because it's a place where all of us can participate. Because when you look at your own individual specialty, you may find out there's very few people engaged in this space. So that's what I found out is I looked around and I said, I need to find a mentor who's in oncology doing this. I looked around and I realized that there weren't many people at all. And so then you have to start looking internally and realize if you want to see change, that may actually have to start with you. So in terms of quantification, I realized that the standardized way for quantifying your emissions associated with your field or with something you're doing within your field is calculated by doing a life cycle assessment. And a life cycle assessment looks at a process from start to finish, so from cradle to grave. So all the inputs and then all of the outputs. So, for example, the first one that I found was looking at common OBGYN procedures, a hysterectomy, removing the uterus. And so they looked at everything that's used in the surgery and all the upstream of that. So how are all of these products made and what are the emissions associated with those products and with the supply chain to actually get that product into the OR? What's used during the OR? So looking at the space, at the HVAC system, at the energy usage, at the transit required for everybody, not only the surgeons, but all the staff and the patient to travel there. And then what are the outputs? So what is the waste stream? Where do all these things go? Are things going into landfill? Are they single use? Are they reusable? Are they biohazardous? And then you calculate that, and that's how you start to actually quantify this. And that's how you find hotspots. So areas where you can actually create change and drive down your emissions. And so our life cycle assessment right now that we're doing is for cancer care. And we have started with radiation because that's where I'm very familiar with, and looking at the emissions for a patient to undergo the most common disease sites. So whether it be, GYN, in cervical cancer treatment, or a head and neck case. From the time we see the patient in consult until their last treatment ends, what are all of the things associated with that and what are the emissions? And then we are extending to other components of cancer care as well. And a big part of that is going to be looking at chemotherapy and all of the drugs that are used. And so that's our life cycle assessment project. And then a component of that is also a waste audit. So in radiation oncology, we frequently do an OR procedure called brachytherapy. And that's where we deliver very high dose radiation directly to the tumor. So oftentimes we're putting catheters in place and then deliver radiation. And the patient may stay overnight for a night or two. And so with that procedure, we are doing a waste audit. And so after each procedure, we actually go in and two students measure or weigh all of our waste. And we've partnered with an AI company here in the Bay Area. And so we can actually use AI tools that take pictures of everything that's in the bins, so landfill and biohazardous waste, and it will tell us what's in there, how much does it weigh, and was it appropriately sorted? So it can tell us if it went into the wrong bin. And then we track this over time and we find areas where we can reduce our waste, especially with unused items. That's a big thing in surgeries. Oftentimes things are opened and then never used. So that's a really great place where you can actually reduce that and prevent unnecessary waste. And it allowed us just to look at different parts. You know, are there places in our procedure where we could be using reusable items instead of single-use items? So we use a lot of foam, single-use foam. Can we actually switch to gel? So can we use gel blocks for patient immobilization instead of foam? When we started our waste audit and using this tool, we actually were able to drive down our red bag waste, which has a very big environmental impact, from several kilograms per procedure to zero, because we found out that all of our red bag waste actually did not need to be red bag waste. And then we created a template and this tool, this phone app that can be used by other specialties. So that's been a big thing within our lab, getting other people in other specialties to use this. And then the last project that we've been doing is looking at the impact of wildfires on cancer care and patient outcomes. So with this, we know that there's very big wildfires in California, especially Northern California, in the last couple of years. They're not only becoming more frequent, but they're becoming more destructive. And so that's what we want to understand. Are patients missing visits, and how is that impacting their outcomes? And so that's a big project that we are finding. Yes, clinics are shutting down and patients are missing radiation visits and chemotherapy visits. And we know that does impact survival. So we're in the middle of quantifying that and building that out and using large databases such as NCDB, the National Cancer Registry, to look at wildfires and are just starting to collaborate with other folks in Florida and Puerto Rico and Texas, which I mentioned before. Again, using the same surveys and same databases to understand this. The idea behind this is we can figure out who is most vulnerable. So not only cancer patients, but we know communities that are often hit by disparities. The disparities are exacerbated by climate change and these disasters. And so by understanding who's most vulnerable, we can put in place adaptation and mitigation efforts to keep them safe during these times. So we can actually build out with hospitals and clinics and states and local governments, we can build out emergency preparedness plans. And that's a big thing, you know, moving forward in the next 5, 10, 15 years that I think a lot of physicians are going to be engaged in is how do we have these preparedness plans for these climate-fueled disasters that we are inevitably going to see more of, and how do we keep the most vulnerable patients safe?
Wow. And how many people are part of your lab? How many folks are engaged on these projects? They sound enormous.
Yeah. So our lab has been growing really quick. We just started it about a year ago. And I would say it started with maybe 5 students, most of which were from Loyola, actually, and as well as UCSF. And now we have over 30 students engaged, students, residents, and several faculty. So it's growing quick. We actually get, you know, a student almost every week reaching out. And I think, you know, so many people are realizing, unfortunately, that this is really impacting their communities and their patients. And students have really been the driver in climate health and sustainability and bringing the healthcare field into it. So yeah, I think there's a lot of opportunities for more people to participate.
I want to touch on something that you said earlier. You spoke about how when you were developing your interest in this niche, you looked for a mentor, but there wasn't necessarily one there working specifically on what you were interested in. And so you had to create that for yourself. I feel like that's something that medical students often struggle with, is they find, you know, reaching out for mentors to be difficult, whether it's working just in general for mentorship or on a specific project. And so I'd love to hear, in that process of realizing, okay, maybe this hasn't been done before, so I'm going to go set out and do it myself. How did you decide to do that, or feel like you had the means to do that?
I think, you know, oftentimes we look in our immediate circle for mentors. And we look for a very classic mentor and ask to participate in a project that they're already working on. And I had to step outside of my comfort zone many times and start to look for mentors across the nation. And you know, I do have a lot of fantastic mentors in oncology, radiation oncology, you know, or many, many of which are in, you know, the environmental space. They're engineers in life cycle assessments. And, you know, really focusing on building those collaborations and telling your story and telling people why you want to do this and realizing that it's okay to be a pioneer in this, and that, you know, the mentors, oftentimes we're stepping into this together and there is a lot to learn. And, you know, we've made a lot of mistakes along the way because we are sort of pioneering in this space, but that's okay. We can sort of go step by step together, and you know, you got to start somewhere, I think. So I think it's, you know, just really, I would encourage anybody, if it doesn't seem black and white and there's a lot of gray area, to step outside your comfort zone and share your story and explain what your passion is and what your vision is. And a lot of people will join you. And, you know, for example, within radiation oncology, we didn't have anybody focused on this, but that change can start anywhere. And so what I did within radiation oncology is I said, let's have a task force. Let's have a resident-led task force. So that's the Aero Climate Health Equity and Sustainability Task Force. And very similar to the lab, it started with 2-3 people and has grown. I think now we have similar size, over 30 residents. And it starts to build momentum when you share the story and when you look for data to support and back what you're saying. We had the opportunity to go and submit our research and talk on this at the national conference last year. It's called ASTRO. And, you know, those things do, they get attention. And so just last week, actually, ASTRO confirmed that they are going to be launching a task force, a climate task force within the larger professional society. And I think it shows that in medicine, the change doesn't always have to come from the top down and filter down to the students or to the residents, that it really can go from bottom up, and you can engage a lot of people and, you know, put these task force and these initiatives in place just with passion and action.
And for students that are interested in engaging in your niche, now that you are such a leader in these efforts, do you have advice for students on how to be a good mentee and what you look for students who are reaching out or the students who work with you?
Yeah, I think, you know, being inquisitive and being motivated and passionate and having a question and wanting to dive deep into that question is always important. We oftentimes hear this, you know, when you're going through your different clinical rotations, you know, read, 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 do your background research. And so I think that's always a really great place, is just spend time reading about the issue and understanding who's engaged in this and what have they done and where are the gaps and how can we contribute to this? I think that is always key. And that's, you know, what I found is, yes, it seemed like at first nobody was engaged. And then you find out there are many people just like yourself that are worried and passionate. And so finding those people and collaborating with them and not reinventing the wheel is always key. So I think, you know, whether you're in Chicago or whether you're in another place training, there's probably somebody at your hospital who is worried about the same things, who is questioning the same things, or there's somebody in your community or in your state who is working on this. And so finding those people and collaborating with them is always very helpful.
Awesome. And now as a bit of a transition and to ask about you, with your many projects and passions, what are your practices for finding balance in your life? And I know some people abhor the word balance, but however you like to think about it, like integrating personhood into your research and your medical career, how do you figure out how you spend your time?
I think that's something, you know, with being in medicine, all of us will always be looking for that balance. It will probably always be a little bit imbalanced. But I think, you know, a great time to learn what's most important for you and how to stay in a healthy physical and mental space is key. And learning what that is in medical school is a really good time. So figuring out what refills your glass, what refills you. How can you be your best self the next day? And so a lot of that is, you know, simple wellness things for me. And I learned this in medical school, and these are things, they're non-negotiables for me. So these things must be done every day. And then, you know, as long as I fit in time for myself, good sleep, working out, spending time out in the sun, and getting in exercise and in nature, those things are all key for me. And I guess they're, and, you know, of course, spending time with my loved ones and my partner are non-negotiables. And so, you know, basically I form my day around making sure that those things all take place, you know, that I'm eating well, that I got enough sleep, that I am getting outside, that I see the sun, and that I get a chance to work out. Once I know that all those things are capable, then I start slotting in the other things, because there's always going to be too much on our plate. There's always more research to do. There's always more to do on the clinical side. But knowing that I am not going to bring my best self forward in a patient encounter, and let alone, you know, also research or, you know, a lab meeting, knowing that I'm not going to bring my best self if I don't do these things has really been grounding for me. So they're absolute non-negotiables. And, you know, if it's late and it comes down to finishing a research project or going home and taking a walk with my partner in Golden Gate Park, well, I know exactly which one I'm going to go for. So I think, you know, just keeping in mind for me that this is a long journey and that they're, you know, being committed to being a lifelong learner and a lifelong investigator and now a climate health activist and researcher, that this is going to be, it's always going to be busy. And so how do I make sure I enjoy the process? How do you enjoy the ride and really make sure that I'm bringing my best self forward every day? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. That's such great perspective. And I like how you pinpointed medical school as a good time to learn about oneself and figure out one's own non-negotiables. That's a very relatable process that I myself am going through, as well as many of my peers. We talk often about how in the midst of med school, like staying up to pace seems like the priority to the point where sometimes we feel like we lose ourselves as a person amidst all of that. And so I know many of us have found that a component of med school is learning how to do that, how to take care of yourself and continue to, as you said, bring your best self forward so that you can accomplish all the things that you want to accomplish.
Yeah. And I think, you know, oftentimes in interviews, you get the question, how do you juggle so many balls? I always hear that. And I like that one because I think about it as, you know, things are going to drop all the time. But if you have a great support system and you're a good team member, and you're a good mentee or good mentor, that you know that the ball is going to get picked up again. We can't all juggle all these balls and keep them up in the air all the time, it's okay. They will drop. Many of them will drop from time to time, but knowing where they are and just going and finding them and picking them back up, whether it's you or a team member. So I think a lot of times we really put a lot of pressure on ourselves, but it's okay to let them drop.
I think that's a tendency that a lot of medical students have, is to feel like they're taking on the world on their own. But yeah, developing that team, working together to get through it together. I like that. Well, one of the questions that we always ask near the end of the podcast is related to our audience, as I mentioned, is a lot of pre-medical students, medical students, and young residents. And so with that in mind, I wanted to ask if you had any other career and/or life advice to share.
A great question. I would say, finding what you're passionate about. I know it seems really simple, but it's so easy to get drained along the way. And finding out what you're passionate about and figuring out a way to incorporate it into your everyday, I think has really been helpful. So for me, that was not only, clinical care and taking care of patients and, being engaged in global health, but it was, personally, climate health and sustainability. And that was something that was important to my family and to my partner. And so, how do you take these passions and bring it into your everyday work, into your everyday life? And thinking about opportunities to do that, is really helpful. And when passion drives you, I think it allows for you not to be drained as much, and allows you to stay connected. For example, we're passionate about sustainability and about, spending time with loved ones. So, right now my commute, rather than drive every day, I walk with a friend, with a colleague, or with my partner to work. And I think it's nice. It allows you to do things that you're passionate about, like reducing your own footprint, but also you need to get to work and you want to socialize and you want to exercise. And so how can you really build your passions into your everyday life and build a sustainable lifestyle that incorporates it all.
Well, Dr. Lichter, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today for Medicus. I feel like we covered a lot of different topics, but they're all so interesting and relevant to our audience. So I really want to say thank you for taking the time.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's been really fun and always, excited to meet more Loyola students and to engage them in our project. So I really appreciate you for allowing me to participate today.
Absolutely. And for our audience, go check out the calculator Network Without Harm that will be linked in this episode's description. For students and residents going on interviews soon, check out Interview Without Harm. If you want to learn more about Green Health Lab and their many projects, their lab website is linked in the description.
Thanks for listening to this episode. This wouldn't be possible without the support from our listeners. Please rate, review, and subscribe. We appreciate donations to help fund the production of this podcast. To support us, go to medicuspodcast.com, where you can additionally find show notes, links, and information about our guests. We are at Medicus Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. If you have any questions, comments, or episode suggestions, please submit them on our website. This podcast is intended for general information purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine. No patient-doctor relation is formed, and the content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Views and opinions are their own and do not represent any organization.